Thank you all for coming. This is an interesting follow-up to Dennis because he touched on a couple of items where we, as obviously you heard, I'm a research scientist for an insurance company, and so the first thought isn't, why is research or why is an insurance company engaged in this type of work, and especially in race information collection, because one of the foundations of racial and ethnic disparity research is, first and foremost, there's a really first step that's very important, and that's what I want to address today, and that is you can't do any of this that you're going to hear about until you have race information. And so this bill that's on the floor is interesting, too, that they want to collect this information. You'll see, and I'll touch on the slide, but fear of misuse is one of the biggest reasons why we don't have this information. So it'd be interesting to really see how far this actually does go in the public environment. But we as a private insurance company know, and this is a background that just to give you guys, you're in the room, so you understand the issues around racial disparity. So I won't spend a lot of time on this, but there were some interesting points here that I just wanted to touch on. And that is a few of the published literature showing how African Americans have a much higher death rate. Other minority groups, less likely to have health insurance. And then the third bullet, even when they do have health insurance, they're less likely to be adherent with a lot of the medical guidelines that are out there and getting the needed care for certain types of illnesses and preventative maintenance. And again, that first step, collecting information. We don't have a lot of race information. We do on our Medicaid side because we collect that in our survey or in our in the application process. We'll collect that on the government side of the business. But in our commercial side of the business, we don't collect that race information. So we don't know that. And that's a big part of our member population is the commercial side. And a few years ago, AHIP is America's Health Insurance Plan. They outlined three reasons why insurance companies should collect it. And they're all very intuitive, but it was an important step in saying, let's go beyond this premium calculation fear. It's not going to sit in the actuary's office, and it's really designed to help us with quality care management, racial disparities, et cetera. So, without it, we can't do any of the work that we're talking about. And currently, there's no uniform way to collect that information. There's two methods, as you may know. There's a direct and an indirect way to collect race. So the direct is the very easy way. That's to complete a questionnaire. The person interviewing them, they'll mark down the race of that person, or the person being interviewed will say on that application what they are. And then there's the indirect methods, which you may have been exposed to. And that's the surname analysis. The typical ones are surname analysis and geo-imputation, which says, based on where you live, the census data has information about that block, and therefore we can impute some information on that. So there's obviously a lot of limitations and errors involved in that, but most of the current literature addresses those two types of methods. So as I said earlier, we don't have any information on our commercial side, so we have to do that second, which is indirect, and that is impute race, so that we can do all of these great things here, which is address racial disparities. We're engaged in a cultural competence work group. We need to know what our members, what their race and ethnic and language needs are, so that we can build a sufficient provider network, so that we have providers both geographically dispersed as well as linguistically and culturally diverse to meet the needs of our members. We are bound as an insurance company, if you don't know this, to be accredited. Just like a school has to be accredited, an insurance company has to be accredited. And there's a lot that a company has to go through to get accredited, but one of them is to complete that cultural needs assessment, as I just described. And most importantly, though, in my field, in my area, it's really another variable in a model, right? It's a way to explain. Just sat through a session just a second ago where they were using race and ethnicity information to explain colonoscopy procedures, why some people get it and some don't, right? Just as you want to age adjust and SES adjust, you need to adjust for race and see, because that is a highly predictive factor in a lot of the models that we build. So today's talk is really about, it's a methods approach. It's how do you do it, and why is this different than what's in the current literature? As I said earlier, the two main things in the literature, current literature, are last name and geo-imputation. So we took it a step further because we have the ability as an insurance company, we have medical claims. And so that's a very rich data source to collect information on. And so I'm going to walk you through the methods in brief of how we did it, because a lot of this is still in, we've sent the paper off to get it published. So you won't see a lot of the details, but you'll get a good overview of how to do it and why you should do it. So what we did is we took our original data set, and this is a Medicaid population because we know their race. So we had about 350,000 people that we knew their race information on. And we took 80% of that data, and we use that as what I call the development data set. And that's something so that we could look at, of all those 280,000 people, let's look at their names, let's look at where they live, let's look at their medical diagnoses, and build our own data set that says, if you have this certain name or this certain diagnosis, there's a high propensity that you're a certain race. We separated the 20% of the data set so that we can actually test those algorithms on it. So we had about a 70,000 record for our modeling set. And then within that modeling, those are, for the statisticians in the room, we had a training data set and a scoring data set so that we could validate that algorithm. This is a very sort of rudimentary graphic of how this went, how we did this. We took the U.S. Census Bureau data, so they have a very rich data source of 100 names or more on the surname analysis, and it'll give you actually propensity scores of certain names. We can combine that information. There's a lot of good web resources out there that have racial ethnic biased names, and we combine all those. We took all that information and we took our proprietary data set that we had developed, and we came up with these first name lists. For example, Ching would be considered an Asian first name. Parker would be a white first name. Last names. And then, for example, this is again where we start to take it a little further and actually get into diagnoses. As you know, one of the most common ones, sickle cell anemia in the African American population. Well, there's a high likelihood that if you have that diagnosis in your medical claims, that you're African American. This is an example of what that distribution might look like. So again, you might build out Washington and you would have a distribution across all the races. And here, Washington would be assigned, the last name Washington would be assigned to African Americans, Yoder to Caucasians or white, and Zhang as Asian. Same thing for the medical diagnoses. We would have probability distributions across all the races. And that's the important thing here, is not to get locked into an actual categorical. So it's not just sickle cell with crisis is African American. This is actually a continuous variable in a model. So as the same with the last and the first names. The geo-imputation, this is how it works. This is San Francisco. And so all the different colors represent, from the census data, the percentages. The different colors are actually the different races. And so, for example, each census block, which is the smallest unit that you can get to in a census data, each census block would have a distribution of races across that. And again, just like the first and last name and the medical diagnoses, you can assign it a categorical value of Asian, or you can also have a numerical or continuous distribution as well. One slide that I don't have in here, but it goes along with this, and the name was the familial inference. And what we did there was we made the assumption that people who were living in the same household based on the same address, that they were of the same race. And obviously that's a big assumption, right? But it's an assumption that was in our model. And so what we did is it was a step process and said, okay, if this person doesn't have anything at first name, last name, et cetera, but they are living in a household with someone who has some race assignment, then we would make it that way too. So that's the four steps. That's the multi-layer: first name and last name, the geo-imputation, the GIS, and then the medical diagnosis and the familial inference. So when you put all those together, we could make our own. We made three different imputed race algorithms based on varying the priority of these different ones, right? So if their last name said they were Caucasian, then we could have a sort of a waterfall or a step-down approach, and then it would go to geoimputation, then it might go to diag race, and it would make an estimated guess that said, this is what we think that person is. And we did three different variations because some of the steps here were better than others at estimating race. And when we did that, we realized that this was really just too complicated for a human brain to process all those permutations, right? And so that's why we actually took it one step further and let a decision tree do that. So a decision tree is just a modeling technique to make a prediction, and it makes a multinomial prediction, right? So it actually can predict someone's likelihood of being all four or five races. And that's the important thing, too, to keep in mind, is not just categorizing somebody as something, but giving them a probability that they are a certain race. That's what a decision tree looks like. I won't go into it, but it's just it says which one's the most important, and then if our imputed race algorithm number two said you were white, and then our first one said you were black, then the probability, and then at the end of all of this, you have every person, 100% of the data set is imputed with a value. These were the most important variables in the model. We did a pretty good job with our first imputation algorithm, and then it was the percentage of the African Americans in a census block, their first name, race, and so on down the list. This is our results, our classification matrix. How well did we do? The ones in yellow are accuracy rates. So this is when we, of the actual all known Asians, how well did we do? We did the worst here at 28%. African Americans at 58%, Hispanics at 69%, and whites at 96%. So overall, when you put all that together, high bias obviously towards the Caucasian, we ended up with an 87.3% overall accuracy rate. This is just another picture of that, but what it shows you is where the errors mainly occurred. And it mainly occurred, for example, here, 27% of the Asians we actually got right. The majority of them we got wrong because we called them white. Same here, African American population, 58% we were correct on. Pretty much everybody else we were wrong because we called them white. The other side of accuracy is positive predictive value, right? That says, of all the known Asians, how well did I do at getting, how well did I do at estimating them? And that really starts to get down to the member level information. So we did much better here on all the races except for white, where we lost a little ground there. So if you were going to go at something at the member level, you would be more concerned at raising your positive predictive value. But if you were going at, member-wide racial disparity research or something like that, you may want to go at overall accuracy. Saw a few heads shake in the room about geoimputation. This is why it works in some races, and in some races it doesn't work. And it does very well in the Caucasian African-American populations because they live in areas that are more segmented like that, right? This is our actual data, and you'll see this in the literature as well. And in the Hispanic and Asian populations, it doesn't work as well because the census plots are more segmented and more diverse. Some of the literature you'll see will say if you want to do well in African American geoimputation, take anybody who lives in a census block where that block is 66% African American or more, call everybody in that block African American. In our data, what we did, so I highlighted that. I said, okay, let's see how well that works in ours. So we had 960 members who lived in those types of census blocks. Not bad, 87.4% of them were actually African American. So that is a pretty good way in this data to actually do that. We actually did a little better, though, because we correctly identified 88% of them. But the important thing here is the numbers that you're imputing. So we were able to actually impute over 1,100 of them correctly versus if we had done just the geo block, geo imputation, we would have only picked up 839. And I think I'm out of time, but just as a wrap-up, we've already actually put this into work. As I said earlier, our cultural needs assessment for accreditation purposes. We're working with our cultural competence work group, which is a company-wide effort to address racial disparities. We've already completed our first assessment of our racial disparity work. We've identified hypertension and diabetes as our problem areas in our commercial population. So we're actively now addressing those with our clinical improvement areas and our clinical outreach folks. So this this data is being used today and making good progress. What is this? Oh, this is my disclosure. So
thank you.
Thank you.